This Habsburg family was a growing and acquisitive one. It had lands and possessions throughout Germany, and in 1273, after the extinction of the Hohenstaufen House, Rudolf of Habsburg was elected Emperor of Germany, a distinction that became at last practically hereditary in his family. Nonetheless, the men of Uri, Schwyz, and Unterwalden didn't mean to be ruled by any Habsburg. They formed an everlasting league in 1291, and they held their own among the mountains from that time onward to this day, first as free members of the empire and then as an absolutely independent confederation. Of the heroic legend of William Tell, we have no space to tell here, nor have we room in which to trace the gradual extension of the confederation to its present boundaries. Romanche, Italian, and French-speaking valleys were presently added to this valiant little republican group. The Red Cross flag of Geneva has become the symbol of international humanity in the midst of warfare. The bright and thriving cities of Switzerland have been a refuge for free men from a score of tyrannies. 11th A. Most of the figures that stand out in history do so through some exceptional personal quality, good or bad, that makes them more significant than their fellows. But there was born at Ghent in Belgium in 1500 a man of commonplace abilities and melancholy temperament, the son of a mentally defective mother who had been married for reasons of state, who was, through no fault of his own, to become the focus of the accumulating stresses of Europe. The historian must give him a quite unmerited and accidental prominence, side by side with such marked individualities as Alexander and Charlemagne and Frederick II. This was the Emperor Charles V. For a time, he had an air of being the greatest monarch in Europe since Charlemagne. Both he and his illusory greatness were the results of the matrimonial statecraft of his grandfather, the Emperor Maximilian I, born in 1459 and died in 1519. Some families have fought, others have intrigued their way to world power. The Habsburg married their way. Maximilian began his career with the inheritance of the Habsburg, Austria, Styria, part of Alsace and other districts. He married, the lady's name scarcely matters to us, the Netherlands and Burgundy. Most of Burgundy slipped from him after his first wife's death, but the Netherlands he held. Then he tried unsuccessfully to marry Brittany. He became emperor in succession to his father, Frederick III, in 1493, and married the Duchy of Milan. Finally, he married his son to the weak-minded daughter of Ferdinand and Isabella, the Ferdinand and Isabella of Columbus, who not only reigned over a freshly united Spain and over Sardinia and the kingdom of the Two Sicilies, but by virtue of the papal gifts to Castile, over all America west of Brazil. So it was that Charles, his grandson, inherited most of the American continent, and between a third and a half of what the Turks had left of Europe. The father of Charles died in 1506, and Maximilian did his best to secure his grandson's election to the imperial throne. Charles succeeded to the Netherlands in 1506. He became practically king of the Spanish dominions, his mother being imbecile, when his grandfather Ferdinand died in 1516. And his grandfather Maximilian, dying in 1519, he was, in 1520, elected emperor at the still comparatively tender age of 20. His election as emperor was opposed by the young and brilliant French king Francis I, who had succeeded to the French throne in 1515 at the age of 21. The candidature of Francis was supported by Leo X in 1513, who also requires from us the epithet brilliant. It was indeed an age of brilliant monarchs. It was the age of Babur in India, 1526 to 1530, and Suleiman in Turkey, 1520. Both Leo and Francis dreaded the concentration of so much power in the hands of one man as the election of Charles threatened. The only other monarch who seemed to matter in Europe was Henry VIII, who had become King of England in 1509 at the age of 18. He also offered himself as a candidate for the empire, and the imaginative English reader may amuse himself by working out the possible consequences of such an election. There was much scope for diplomacy in this triangle of kings. Charles, on his way from Spain to Germany, visited England and secured the support of Henry against Francis by bribing his minister, Cardinal Wolsey. Henry also made a great parade of friendship with Francis. There was feasting, tournaments, and such like antiquated gallantries in France, in a courtly picnic known to historians as the Field of the Cloth of Gold in 1520. Knighthood was becoming a picturesque affectation in the 16th century. The Emperor Maximilian I is still called the last of the knights by German historians. The election of Charles was secured, it's to be noted, by a vast amount of bribery. He had as his chief supporters and creditors the great German business house of the Fuggers. That large treatment of money and credit, which we call finance, which had gone out of European political life with the collapse of the Roman Empire, was now coming back to power. This appearance of the Fuggers, whose houses and palaces outshone those of the emperors, marks the upward movement of forces that had begun two or three centuries earlier in Cahors, in France, and in Florence and other Italian towns. Money, public debts, and social unrest and discontent re-enter upon the miniature stage of this outline. Charles V wasn't so much a Habsburg as a Fugger emperor. For a time, this fair, not very intelligent-looking young man with the thick upper lip and long, clumsy chin, features which still afflict his descendants, was largely a puppet in the hands of his ministers. Able servants, after the order of Machiavelli, guided him at first in the arts of kingship. Then, in a slow but effectual way, he began to assert himself. He was confronted at the very outset of his reign in Germany with the perplexing dissensions of Christendom. The revolt against the papal rule, which had been going on since the days of Hus and Wycliffe, had been recently exasperated by a new and unusually cynical selling of indulgences to raise money for the completion of St. Peter's at Rome. A monk named Luther, who had been consecrated as a priest, who had taken to reading the Bible, and who, while visiting Rome on the business of his order, had been much shocked by the levity and worldly splendour of the papacy, had come forward against these papal expedients at Wittenberg in 1517, offering disputation and propounding certain theses. An important controversy ensued. At first Luther carried on this controversy in Latin, but presently took to German, and speedily had the people in a ferment. Charles found this dispute raging when he came from Spain to Germany. He summoned an assembly or diet of the empire at Worms on the Rhine. To this Luther, who had been asked to recant his views by Pope Leo X, and who had refused to do so, was summoned. He came, and entirely in the spirit of Hus, refused to recant unless he was convinced of his error by logical argument or the authority of Scripture. But his protectors among the princes were too powerful for him to suffer the fate of John Hus. Here was a perplexing situation for the young emperor. There's reason to suppose that he was inclined at first to support Luther against the Pope. Leo X had opposed the election of Charles and was friendly with his rival, Francis I. But Charles V was not a good Machiavellian, and he had acquired in Spain a considerable religious sincerity. He decided against Luther.